Tonight's gospel is from John, chapter 6, verses 56 through 69. Whosoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood remains in me, and I in him. Just as the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so the one who feeds on me will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven. Your forefathers ate manna and died. But he who feeds on this bread will live forever. He said this while teaching in the synagogue at Capernaum. On hearing it, many of the disciples said, "This is a hard teaching. Who can accept it?" Aware that his disciples were grumbling about this, Jesus said to them, "Does this offend you? What if you see the Son of Man ascend to where he was before? The Spirit gives life. The flesh counts for nothing. The words I have spoken to you are spirit, and they are life. Yet there are some of you who do not believe me." For Jesus had known from the beginning that which of them did not believe and who would betray him. He went on to say, "This is why I told you that no one can come to me unless the Father has enabled him." From this time, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. "You do not want to leave too, do you?" Jesus said, asked the 12. Simon Peter answered him, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. We believe and know that you are the Holy One of God."
It's hard. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard living among the swirl and the wind and the winding words and the unraveling truths. It used to be there was going to be a future. Do you remember that? It used to be there was going to be a future where scientists and engineers and the factors, those folks that find the facts about things, it used to be there was going to be a future when those factors were going to find out all the facts we needed. Do you remember that? In the future, it was like we agreed upon it. They will be figuring stuff out. All the facts that we need to make enough energy without destroying the planet, without heating the earth up and putting every living thing on a slow roast. All the facts we needed to help the white rhinos from going extinct. All the facts we needed to fight Alzheimer's, cure cancer, regrow organs, rebuild the hearts, kidneys, livers, lungs. Those factors, they were going to find out all the facts we needed to guarantee healthy baby weights, nutrition, pre- and postnatal comfort, care and concern. And every kid everywhere, they all get the same chance, education, nurture, opportunities to try and to try. All the facts that we need to free people from addiction, heal people from generational deficits, and the tools to work together to resolve whatever conflict might arise. All the facts we need. So everybody had enough to eat. There was going to be a future where the folks who do the research, make the calculations, discover the science, find the hard scientific facts that would work it all out. But no more. The future is gone, missed, squandered, overshot, misunderstood, irrelevant, irrelevant. See, we all thought that the problem was that the problem was the facts, hard facts. We thought the problem with cancer and global warming and malnutrition and war and disease, we thought the problem was with the facts. We didn't have the facts. We didn't know how to cure cancer or global warming or end disease. We were getting close, but there were still some things we had to figure out, still some facts we needed to know. And just as soon as the factors figured out those facts, they would drop them into the equation and start curing and cooling and repairing and feeding and peacemaking in the future, right? But no. No. We found the facts. They did. They found the facts. They know now. The scientists and the engineers and the economists and the hydrologists and the social scientists and the climatologists, they found the facts. And like all the other facts that the fact founders found, they threw them in that big pile, that big pit, and they're all there, and they're just there, so many, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We know what to do about global. We knew what to do about global warming 50 years ago. We knew that we'd better start taking steps to reverse global warming 30 years ago. 20 years ago, we knew that it was going to be too late to completely reverse global warming, but we could still slow its effects considerably. 10 years ago, we knew that if we didn't do something immediately, it would be too late and the planet would eventually reach temperatures that could no longer sustain life. But we didn't do anything. We had the facts. We knew what to do. We had the facts, but they didn't matter. It's a machine. The future is a machine that runs on greed and is immune to truth and knowledge. And that's why, more than ever, what we need now... Hold on, I said. Hold on, I said. Is this a movie you're telling me about? She stopped her slow advance towards me. Not that she was consciously backing me up against the dessert table, but it was more that she was compelled or propelled by her passion or her obsession, her desire to communicate a revolutionary knowledge that was moving her closer to me so her truth could somehow like penetrate me, this revelation. But I hadn't been paying attention. I don't even remember how we started talking. We were just there by the dessert table. And I was moving my tongue around in my mouth, trying to discern if the dip had cumin in it. Or was that something from the cracker that I was tasting? She looked me in the eye for the first time. "A movie?" she asked. As if she'd just also come to. I don't know if she was paying that much attention to me either. Was she lost in her rant? I mean, it doesn't seem kind to call it a rant, but it was kind of a rant. I tried to re-engage. Okay, so it's not a movie. A movie? Are you joking? This is really, like, real. All right, okay. So we thought the facts would solve every problem in the future, and then the future came and we found all the facts, but nobody cared, and nobody used them to solve the world's problems? Yes! Yes, yes, yes! She lifted her hands in the air in a gesture of praise and then brought them down and held my face between them. And I'm thinking... It seems strange, but sometimes chili powder can kind of taste like cumin. And she released my face, and then she looked at me like it was my turn to talk. So I did. Why didn't anyone care or use the facts to solve the world's problems? Because there's not enough blood in them, she said. You can't bite into them and feel the warm flesh in your throat as you swallow it. We actually need to eat Jesus' flesh. That's what it says. And drink his blood. Drink the blood actually, she said, taking a slight step forward. Oh, yeah, I said. Yes, I remember now. She'd come up, and we were talking, and she brought up this passage, and she asked this thing, and I know what you're saying now. I said to her, those who eat my flesh and drink my blood abide in me, and I abide in them. What did you call it before? Incarnational ingestion? Okay, I had forgotten where we started. You would not believe how many impromptu sermons I get from complete strangers. They hear I'm a minister, you know, and I meet them at some Reddit dinner party or on an airplane, or like this woman at the dessert table at the National Night Out block party, and they find out you're a minister, and at first they start asking a few questions, you know, about this and that, and then they'll come around to like, and they'll say something like, you know what I always wondered about? And then that's it. They launch into some sermon, what they think about some particular passage or whatever. And I'm just like, I'm the minister. I'm supposed to be giving the sermons, not listening to them. And I can't remember your name. And I don't, you know, you seem nice. And she did. And she was like, you know, long kind of grayish hair and just seemed like very sincere about everything. And passionate, which is what we need in life, right? People who are more sincere and passionate. But I was still playing catch up, and she could veer off the edge from sincere and passionate to, like, I don't know. Anyway, it's National Night Out. Let's make friends, I thought. Let's talk. So she gives me her sermon. She's talking. They ask a few questions. She's telling me this. I'm back in, and she's like, so this passage, he won't stop. She said, Jesus won't let people off the hook. Her voice sort of raising a half an octave, like she's doing a Seinfeld impersonation. They seem willing to treat it like a metaphor, but he's insisting that they really eat his flesh, that they really drink his blood. To what end? I ask, looking for a rhetorical pivot so I can go to my usual, well, thank you for sharing that with me. I'm going to be thinking about that for a long time. It was nice talking to you. But she wasn't going to let me go. I sort of fainted to the right, and she stepped in front of me. To what end? To what end? People need something real. They need to touch, to taste, to ingest something real. Everyone thought facts were real, the truth was truth, and that the future was in the future. But we know now that this is it. This is what we have. This is what we have. I felt compelled to say something. What do we have? The flesh and blood of God. Well, that does sound impressive when you say it like that. But even in the verse in John's gospel, I pointed out, it says that when many of his disciples heard it, they said, this teaching is difficult. Who could accept it? Because of this, many of his disciples turned back and no longer went about with him. It is a hard teaching. It is a hard teaching. I said, it is a hard teaching. These are hard times, she said. Eat the flesh and drink the blood of God. It's our only hope, she said. Hope, I asked. Hope. Hard hope. Hard hope. Hard science, hard facts didn't work. Hard hope. I'm not into this anti-intellectual, anti-reason creation science thing, I said. No offense. Who's saying that? She threw her hands in the air again and then double-chopped it down. We have the facts. We have the science. We just don't have the love to use them. Love? Hard love. Hard hope. Breeds hard love. You bring whatever it is to the table, whatever is making you hopeless, helpless, scared, alone, bring it to the table and eat. eat the flesh and drink the blood of God, ingest the incarnation of God, and it will transform you. It will hit you like a wheatgrass shot or whiskey or joy. Joy? I asked. Hard joy? Hope and love and joy. Yes, she said, grabbing both of my hands with both of hers and jumping up and down a little. Yes, 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 yes. I couldn't help but smile a little bit. You feel it, don't you? She said. I kind of do, I had to admit. Eat the flesh, drink the blood, she said. Yeah?
Yeah.
I said, is it like magic? She stepped back, still holding both my hands. Magic, what kind of a minister are you? Well, not a good one, I said. It is the ground of being. It is the origin of the universe. It is peace and love. It's the radical mercy of God melting in your mouth and filling you with hard hope. Hard hope. Yes, she said. Hard hope. Eat it. And then what? I couldn't see my family over her shoulder making the what's going on, let's go signs. But I was kind of caught up in this now. And then I said to her, and then, like, when you eat the hard hope, then what about the world and global warming and disease and hate and racism and misogyny and all that other stuff that the hard facts don't fix? Eat the hard hope. Eat the hard hope, she said. Pass it around. Everyone takes a bite of God. And then let's get busy.